We've been looking at spiritual gifts for the last few weeks, and we've talked about kind of the what of spiritual gifts using the categories of prophet, priest, and king. Or as Chris Lindbergh said last Sunday, we could call that the consultant is the one who speaks the truth, and the HR person mediates the relationship, and then the CEO leads and organizes the thing. And even in the newsletter, I encourage you to think about, in your spheres, is there a way you can put those three categories into more contemporary language than prophet, priest, and king? But this morning, I want to look at a passage that helps us not just talk about the what, but the how. And what are specifically a couple of dangers that occur when we, or challenges, when we want to be using our gifts. And so the passage we're going to look at this morning, starting to try to move us forward in some helps in terms of how we use our gifts and why we should be using our gifts. So as Melissa comes forward to read, there's listen for three points. Why is it important to understand our and use our spiritual gifts? What are the challenges in using our gifts? And what are the resources we have in facing those challenges? So when we come to Romans chapter 12, we come to a major transition in this letter to the Romans that Paul wrote. The first 11 chapters are all about how God has made a way for us to have a relationship with him. And it's this great exchange of Jesus takes our sin upon himself and he gives us his righteousness. And therefore, by the faith of Abraham, the same faith that Abraham had in the Messiah, we can have relationship with God because of what Jesus has done for us. That's an oversimplification, but for 11 chapters, he's working out, that's what he's working out, and then the objections to that, and then the other questions and the tertiary issues, but that's what he's doing for 11 chapters. And then from starting with chapter 12 to the 16, he's working out the implications. Well, if this is what you believe, then this is how you should live. And so, and right here, chapter 12 is the transition point. And so verses 1 and 2 are this hinge between these two parts of the letter, the biggest hinge that there is in the book. And so when it says, I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies as a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. He's starting to get into, so how then are you going to live your life? What's it going to look like day to day if you believe that, if you have this relationship with God through what Jesus has done? And so this verses 1 and 2 here are really like a header for the rest of the book in terms of application. But look at the first topic that comes after that header, verses 3 to 8. It's about spiritual gifts, right? So Paul's saying, in one sense, worship is not about going to be a monk somewhere and just reading the Bible and praying, right? To be a really worshipful Christian doesn't mean you isolate yourself, that you take on this aesthetic lifestyle. No, one of the things to be a really worshipful Christian is to use the gifts that God has given you, both the natural gifts, but also those unique spiritual gifts that he's given along with salvation. I think it's pretty surprising that the first topic that he deals with in terms of application is spiritual gifts. And so I think that helps us to think about using our gifts is part of worship. Part of the way we worship God is by faithfully seeking to use those gifts that he's given to us. So the faithful worshiping Christian is not the monk who leaves society to read the Bible and to pray. It's the father and mother that finds the time to read and pray and then make sure the kids get breakfast, get to school, they go and serve in their own capacities and vocations and avocations. And so it's worship in Christianity it's not like an Eastern kind of separate yourself from the world, but it's to worship God, to live out a relationship with God in the midst of the world. So an example to try to get to explain this more is in Matthew 25, there's a story that Jesus tells about a landowner who's got all these resources and he's going to go away on a long journey. And so he calls three of his servants to him and he gives them money according to their ability. And then he goes away and he says, take care of this money. Be a good steward of what I'm giving you. And that's actually called a talent. There was a, it works well for us in English because there's a financial thing called a talent, and spiritual gifts are like talents oftentimes. But so one of the first guy does business with what he's given, and he was given 10 talents and he earns 10 more. And the second guy was given 5 talents and he's doing commerce and he's stewarding the money and he earns 5 more. And the master comes back and says, what have you done? And the first guy says, I've earned 10. And he's like, and he says, well done, good and faithful servant. I'll put you in charge of more things. Enter into the joy of the master. And then the second guy comes up, I earned 5. And he says the exact same thing. So how much he earned isn't an issue. It's how faithful he was with what he had. And he says the same thing. Well done, good and faithful servant. I'll put you in charge of more things. Enter into the joy of your master. I love those three things. I love it when he says, well done, like you did a good job. And I've got more plans for you. I'm going to put you in charge of more things. But then it's enter into the joy of your master. It's not just about you have to work for me. I want you to come and enjoy my presence, right? So it's part of gifts is not only just about production of things. It's being faithful in relationship with God. And joy, experiencing God's joy is part of that. But the last servant said, I was afraid, and so I buried your talent, and here it is. And he doesn't just say, you did a bad thing. He calls him wicked and slothful. And so it's similarly with spiritual gifts. God wants us to use them. He wants us to use them under this umbrella of worship. And so it's very important that we don't just think, oh, well, you know, other people have gifts that are really important. I don't have something that's important, so I'm just going to forget about that. No, all of us get given talents. And, I mean, you might be the one that you get the 10 when you think you don't have anything, but you get the 10, and someone else gets the 5. And so God is giving gifts according to his wisdom, his thought, but whether you get 10, 5, or 1, he wants us to use them as expressions of worship, as reliance on him, as means to enter his joy. So just the way that Paul is crafting this application section shows us it's very important that we think seriously about our spiritual gifts. But what are the challenges of using our gifts? Paul talks about two. In verse 3, he says, for by the grace which was given to me, I say to all of you who are among you, do not think more highly than you ought to think, but think with sober judgment. So the first problem that he's bringing about is your internal, what are you thinking about your gift? Is a gift becoming a means for you to boast yourself up, to increase your own understanding of yourself? So it's like, are you using the gift for yourself or are you using it to serve the community or either in the church or through the church? So when it says that, it's actually using the word think in 4 different ways. Initially, it's are you overthinking of your own importance? Instead, I want you to think with sober judgment. So Paul is saying, when we use our spiritual gifts, we need to think about, am I trying to extort benefit for myself from my gift? Am I trying to serve and use my gifts so that I'll either feel better about myself or that others will feel better about me? So he doesn't want us to use our gift to increase our own identity, but he also doesn't want us to use the gift and say, oh, it's nothing. I don't have any gifts to offer. I don't have anything to offer. So he's calling us to this balance of what God's given me is important and I need to use it, but I need to not use it for myself. Because So a great example of this is John the Baptist. When John the Baptist is beginning his ministry, he realizes, I'm preparing the way for the Christ to come. And people start saying, oh, man, this guy is good. Who do you think he is? And they say, do you think he might be the Christ? And John very quickly says, no, I'm not the Christ. I'm preparing the way. And the Christ, I'm not even worthy to untie the sandals off his feet. And so very quickly, John the Baptist knows, he knows what he's doing is important because he follows his call all the way through and he winds up in jail and he winds up beheaded, actually. So he's committed to using his gifts, but he's very careful to make sure that people don't ascribe too much to him, ascribe more than what he actually should be receiving. Part of the issue is oftentimes in our culture, it's very easy to base our identity on what we do, right? Most of you get annual reviews or semi-annual reviews and you get praised and your salary goes up or down and or your responsibilities go up and down based on how you perform. And so there can be a real pull to use our spiritual gifts in a way that we say, oh man, I did a great job with that. And we use that to kind of bolster up our view of ourselves. But in Christianity, identity and calling are always separated. Identity Jesus establishes for us, calling he gives us to serve him and to serve others. So pride in using our gifts is one of the dangers. And that's where there's that internal-external gap. There can be that gap, right? That waiter that is more interested in telling you what they know than you having a good time. That's part of what's going on there. The other danger here is in verse 4 and 5. So he says, for as in one body we have many members, and the members do not all have the same function, so we, though many, are one body in Christ, and individually members of one another. Some of you work in vocations where you're only as good as your last deal. Or perhaps where you have to always perform at average or above, otherwise your job is in jeopardy. Right? I remember at least in the old days in Nordstrom's, everybody that was below average was on like probation and eventually they would get kicked out. So there was this constant competition of you got to try to sell average or better to keep things going. So and that breeds, if you're in that kind of job, that breeds a certain mentality, right? You might be chummy with your coworkers at the coffee bar, but outside you're smiling, but inside you're scheming to think, how can I stay in this job instead of that guy? This guy over here is going to take my job unless I can outperform him at the end of the quarter. And so some environments create this kind of radical individualism. But Paul is saying the Christian community can't be anything like that at all. Because we all have different gifts, but these gifts come together as one body. The imagery is we all need each other, and we're all going to be serving in different ways and contributing in different ways, but the body requires all of us, many individual parts, to be one entity. Not multiple entities competing with each other, but one entity that actually functions well together, that has synergy, so that it's fine for us for one person has gifts that sets up someone else to shine, for their gifts to shine, right? It might be that the person with the mediating gifts sets it up so that the person with the ordering gifts stands up front and delivers a great plan and everything runs smoothly. And the ordering gift who's up front, that looks like they did a great job, but really it was this synergy of all the gifts coming together. So so we need to make sure that we don't say, so we have different gifts and the gifts need to work together, so we need to make sure that we don't say, my gifts are insignificant. Because in the human body, there's lots of different aspects of what makes us work as humans, and we need all of them, right? Just imagine some horror movie where you've got a person with two legs but with 20 arms and no eyes or ears, right? And they're just like flailing through the place. It's a monstrosity, right? And so if we were a community like that, if somebody says, you know, my small gift isn't important, we'd end up eventually moving more and more towards some kind of monstrosity of this this alien creature that can't, because not everyone's using their gifts. So you could end up saying, my gifts are not significant, but the passage is calling us to say, no, God has given you gifts, and he wants you to use them in worship. And Paul's saying, for the health of the body, we all need to say, no, my gifts are important. I need to exercise them. I need to figure out what they are, and I need to figure out ways to use them. It's that corporate environment where it's, unless you produce average or better, you're gone, is really clean and neat, right? There's hardly any conflicts, because it's like, Joe, you're under average, okay? You've got 49 nanoseconds to clear out your desk, and you're out of here. And I mean, there's no conflict, there's no messiness. It's like shoot your wounded and just go on. But the church is messy, right? If the church is going to be a body, it's going to be messy in terms of how we work out our gifts, how gifts come together. So that's just part of what we have to. That's part of what we have to put up with, and we need to make sure we don't say, you know, this is just too messy. I don't know how to use my gifts. I'll do my part in isolation, and I'll leave. No, we've got to function as a body, as one entity. And so there may be times when the people with the mediating gifts think that people with the word gifts are really brash and arrogant and not pulled together. And there may be times when the ordering gifts, the leading gift people think, oh man, those mediating people, they just muck it all up. If we could just simplify, why do you have to be so concerned about feelings and needs? But that's what Paul wants, a whole body, all of us contributing as we've been and gifted. So those are two dangers in using our gifts. What are some resources? I think the first resource we see is in verse 3. When he says, think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned. There's different ways to take that phrase, but I think probably the best way to take it is to say, not to think of measure as amount, but measure as a tool that measures. And so the measure of faith, the gospel, is the tool that we use to measure how I should be thinking about my gifts. All right? So, you know, when Paul says to Peter in Galatians, you were eating with the Gentiles and the Jews showed up and you pulled away and stopped eating with the Gentiles, you were wrong because you weren't walking in line with the gospel. So the gospel has ethics and direction and a measure built into it. And I think that's part of that's how we think as we should think about our gifts and ourselves, right? Not too much, not too little, because the gospel says you should be humble because Christ had to die for you, right? You were so bad off that it took the death of the Son of God in order to redeem you into a relationship with God. So there's humility built into it, but there's boldness too, because it says you now have a guaranteed relationship with God that you can't mess up, that you're not responsible for maintaining it. God is responsible for maintaining it, because Jesus said, I have completely paid the price for your sins and given you my righteousness. So there might be times when you're thinking, how do I find this range of where I should think not too highly of myself, not too lowly of my gifts? The gospel itself helps us calibrate, because it requires of us both to grow in humility and grow in boldness. So there may be times when if you're a person that errs more on the side of boldness, you're like, I'll do it, I'll do it, I'm brilliant at all those things. Maybe the The gospel is calling you to a humility that tempers that natural boldness. Or if you're someone that says, oh no, I'm not going to do it because nobody asked me to do it and I'm not very good at these things, the gospel is calling you to say, you know, I need to not use that as an excuse. I need gospel boldness to say, you know, I'd like to do that. I think I have abilities and the community is encouraging me in this area. I'd like to serve in that way. So the gospel itself is part of the measure of how we think about ourselves. And then in verse 3, it's just interesting. In 3 and 6, you realize Paul says, Paul's using his gifts, right, in writing this letter. He says, I say to you through the grace which was given to me. And then he says in verse 6, you having gifts according to the grace which is given to you. So Paul's using his gifts, but he's affirming that they all have gifts as well. But it's helpful to think of it, remember, that they are gifts, right? It's something that God has given you. And when if we receive a gift, if someone gives you a painting that they created and you hang it on the wall, and let's say you're struggling with this pride thing, and you tell people, oh, you know, I painted that gift. I painted this painting. I produced it myself. You're using this gift for your own purposes, right? Which is not only false, but it's despicable, right? If you had bought the painting, it would be one thing to say I painted that, because that would just be a lie. But if someone gives you a gift and you misuse it, and you say I painted that, you're actually maligning the person who created it to begin with. So the fact that God has given these gifts to us should encourage us that we use them, that we hold them as valuable and precious, and we realize that we relate to the gift, we realize that the gift came from the giver, and I'm relating to the giver. Because you might be at that dinner party sometime and you're like, I painted this, and then the person who painted it was at the dinner party, like, no, you didn't, I painted that. Right? God's always present saying, I'm the one who gave you this ability, right? And so remembering that these spiritual gifts, that even our natural abilities, they all come as gifts ultimately from God. They're not things that we've created that we can use any way we want to. And then if you go back to verse 2, part of this big hinge, verse 2 says, don't be conformed to this age, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. I think there's a great tension, especially for those of you that are already, you kind of know what your gift is or gifts are, you're using them. One way to put this is, don't be conformed to this age, or don't fall back into the old way you did things. Don't just sort of go back to the default of how you dealt with gifts before you were a Christian. But actually be transformed by your mind. The word transformed here is the same word of Jesus' transfiguration. And so in the Gospels, Jesus had this time when he was transfigured where, in a sense, his image took on what his image will be, right? Or what it will be in glory. It wasn't so much his earthly image, but it was this glowing, glorious, heavenly image. And so when it says transform your mind, you should be thinking forward to who you're going to become, not who you were in using your gifts. So don't default back to, oh, this is how I've always done it. But think about, what is God doing in your life? What's your destination that God has for you? And that should be what inspires the use of your gifts. That's what should shape what they're going to be looking like. Right? So we're moving ahead with where God is taking us. And then finally, another resource is this tension between grace and diligence. Right? These gifts come to us by God's grace. And so as grace is undeserved favor, right? Grace is like a power, really, that God's giving to us. So in one sense, we receive grace, and we just rest in it, and we say, God gave me certain gifts, okay, I'll use them. But then he says he gives instructions for each of these seven gifts that are listed in verse 6 to 8, right? So prophecy in proportion to faith, if service in our serving, the one who teaches in teaching, the one who exhorts in exhortation. So I think there's a tension between these gifts come to us by grace, but we're also supposed to work hard at understanding them and using them to the best of our ability, right? Perhaps it's, if you're serving, make sure it's with a servant heart. If you're teaching, make sure you've taught yourself first before you're teaching others. If you're exhorting, make sure you exhorted yourself first. You know, it might be sort of like if someone gave you the most high-powered lawnmower that ever existed, and you're like, wow, this is great. I can ride in this thing and do all this stuff. And, oh, and the guy says, oh, how did you like your lawnmower? Did you read the manual? Like, no, I just hopped on it. I mowed my lawn. Well, that lawnmower does a whole lot more than mow your lawn. It'll aerate your lawn, too. And you're like, I didn't know that. Well, you need to spend some time with the manual. You need to spend some time thinking and working on it. This lawnmower will actually aerate your lawn. Oh, that's great. Well, and it'll do a lot more, too, if you'll spend the time, if you'll think and reflect in terms of this gift I've given you, how can you put it to use? How can you put it to best use? Right? So in one sense, our gifts are given to us, but I think there's a capacity for us to grow in our ability to use them faithfully. Right? We're going to mature both in our own Christian discipleship is going to help us using the gifts. We're also going to figure out how to use them best, right? So from day one, we don't know the best way to use them, but we will as we spend diligent time with them. So you might be at the place where, oh, I don't really know that much about my spiritual gifts. I've never thought about it very much. I think this passage calls us to spend the reflective time thinking, where are my gifts? And it calls us to make sure we don't say, oh, mine are insignificant. I don't need to worry about that because I don't have one of those important ones. No, they're all important. You might be in the place where you're like, oh, I think I kind of know what's going on with them. This passage, I think, encourages you to say, find ways to use them. In smaller context, in this context, talk to people in the community and say, this is where I think my gifts might be. Is this what you sense? Because the community usually is going to be able to reaffirm, yeah, I think, no, you don't have the gift of administration. That's not it, okay? It's somewhere else. Let me help you work on that one. Or it might be that you figure those out and you're in the midst of using them, and that's great. I think that this passage calls you to make sure you're letting the gospel be the measure of how you see those gifts, making sure you're not using those gifts for yourself, making sure that you can use them to their greatest benefit for the community, for others, for the larger community through the church.